Welcome to Canucks Central at Noon. Your Vancouver Canucks live here.
Drops off for Horvat, back to Edler, then to Horvat at the slot. He scores! Bo Horvat in overtime!
On the home of hockey, Sportsnet 650.
Landeskog turned it over to Horvat, right to the slot. Pettersson scores! Is there anything this kid can't do?
Here's Scott Rintoul and Mick Nazar.
Guess who's back? Back again. Besser's back. Tell a friend. That would be Bob Cole doing spoken word on his cross-country tour, the news of the day. That's BMAC's great brainchild. I think it should happen. Bottom line is Brock Besser is back here in the flesh, Rogers Arena, and he will suit up tonight against the New York Islanders. Scott Rintoul, it's Mick Nazar. We're live at the rink. Site, by the way, of the Canucks for Kids Fund Telethon. Please donate if you have the ability. 1-855-KIDS-FUND. Open right now. Open until midnight tonight. If you donate, and you can do that at Canucks.com/telethon as well. If you donate before midnight tonight, you'll have a chance to win a 2020 Toyota Corolla Hybrid. You'll get your fill of me. I'll be co-hosting the telethon with Perry Salkowski tonight. Bick, you're going to hear throughout the course of this hour, your program. You'll be on the broadcast. You're everywhere tonight as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's such a special day for that telethon. There's so many ways you can donate. You can donate right now, 1-855-KIDS-FUND, 1-855-437-3863, and also CanucksPlace.org/telethon. Get involved. I heard you talking a lot about it earlier. Any way you can support is always going towards something, and it's every little bit helps.
That is a big part of the story tonight, and then there is the on-ice component as well, and that is Brock Besser's return. Skated with Pearson and Horvat. Toffoli remained on the line with Pettersson and Miller, who knows how long that lasts. If it starts that way, we'll see. Travis Green kind of trying to do his game day thing. Hey, you guys know I don't necessarily tell you the lineup. This is welcome news, is it not?
Yes. We talked a lot about it yesterday, and we were kind of picture of best-case scenarios. I mean, this is a great-case scenario. It's just a matter of
how much can he play?
How much can he play, right? And you would expect he's not going to play 16 even-strength minutes with Horvat and Pearson, so how do you cycle him in? Is it 60% of the time he's with them and the other time he's on the bench? And
is Jake Virtanen getting extra shifts? Is JT Miller getting extra shifts? Does Toffoli jump with that line at times? We'll see.
Is Louis Erickson getting a shift there?
Is Louis Erickson playing tonight?
No, look, like these guys are all candidates. One of these guys has to come out.
Oh, I'm serious. Is Louis Erickson playing tonight?
Sure.
If Tyler Mott's healthy and ready to go, I suggest that he's not.
But if Louis Erickson's in the lineup, like he'll probably get shifts with Horvat and Pearson.
Yep.
Who's gotten shifts with them the
Absolutely.
Most, right?
Yep.
And Brock Howsey has a lot more offensive dynamic element to his game, significantly more than Louis Erickson, and he meets a baseline when it comes to defense. But if they're in the lineup, there's a lot of candidates of who can play there because they each bring something different. JT Miller, obviously, he's becoming a star, right? Jake Virtanen brings that offensive flair that you would want at times. But there's defensive value to Louis Erickson. I'm not advocating for it. I'm just saying that's a reality that does exist.
Brock Besser took to the podium for the first time in a while. And yes, there's a different media setup these days here at Rogers Arena. Here's what he had to say when questioned about his return to the lineup.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've just had a few guys in the past that have had different timelines. So it's kind of hard to say when I'll be ready. But, I was doing everything I can to get back as fast as I could, so it's been feeling good for a little bit now. So, obviously, I'm going to come back as fast as I can.
I think people's focus is in the wrong place. The people who are, wow, what the timeline changed, he's back. The nature of this injury was one that it was hard to handicap. And I heard the question today, are you a fast healer? I'm not sure how Besser would know that relative to other rib cartilage injuries, but it's because people had been conditioned to think, and it's because the Canucks put it out there, that there was a possibility he was out for the rest of the regular season. Now, that's been walked back in recent weeks, where Travis Green, almost immediately after Jim Benning said, well, we're optimistic we'll get him back before the end of the season. And then Benning said something in a similar vein the following week. Bottom line, it's been 31 days. His conditioning is not going to be there. Besser said, I'm ready as far as physically, like everything's healed. I'll just probably be taking shorter shifts tonight. Travis Green, just before we talk on it, I think this tells you everything you need to know about where the Canucks are right now. He was asked, Brock Besser, is he right back in the lineup if things are going differently than they are right now for your club, a team that has lost 5 of 6? Here's what he had to say.
I don't think we have the luxury to sit and wait 4 or 5 games and try to massage a practice in for him. We've pushed him in the morning skate. He had a good one the other day where he did a lot of battle drills. And, you know, the one thing about Brock is he's a bit of a natural. You know, that's one thing we've learned over the years with him. I don't think he's a guy that has to skate for 2 weeks to feel good. I think he's kind of a natural athlete that way.
If this team's won 5 of 6 instead of lost 5 of 6 and is sitting 84 points in the standings, Bic, 82 points in the standings, Brock Besser is going to get this week to condition himself up a little bit. As it is, they're hanging right now around the wild card, and they need him.
And that's what we touched on yesterday. Will his comeback be dictated by circumstance? And they wake up today, okay, 1 point out, they have games in hand, they can easily get to Pacific Division 3 seed and just bypass the wild card in it on its own. But it does feel like the situation demands that Brock Besser returns. And that's, we had a long conversation about that yesterday. And that, to me, it's, if the player's comfortable with it and he's at a certain stage and this is just about conditioning, okay, then all signs are go. But this goes back to when you create a murky timeline, people are going to assume there's an influx of ways this could go. And if we operate under a longer timeline, well, he's not physically ready. And if this is just about a conditioning, well, then it was clearly a shorter timeline.
Did you have an issue with the timeline?
Of how it was presented? I'm just pro-transparency.
So
if they want to be secretive about it, be secretive about it, but don't come out and say 8 weeks, and they don't come out and say this thing.
Okay, so here's what it screamed of to me. It screamed of someone saying, look, I don't know how bad the fracture is and how long it's going to heal. There's a possibility this takes 8 weeks. That somebody said that somewhere along the line. I don't think Jim Benning just made that number up out of thin air. Mm-hmm. So I think someone said that. So my guess is that they put that as the ceiling, because anything better than that looks better for them. If they do the opposite, if they go, you know what, this should be a 4-week injury, and he's out any longer than 4 weeks, now people start wondering, well, why is he
right,
not back yet?
But there's the option of just saying upper body week to week. Now, we may not like that as the public and media, but we understand it. Putting an actual timeline and putting dates to it is where I get a little confused.
Yeah,
and why that's necessary.
I think part of that is to deflect away from the question.
Sure.
I think that's part of it as well. You say week to week, you say day to day. Guess what gets asked, day to day or week to week?
So just say it's week to week. Like, we
so
have no issue.
The next week you ask again.
We don't take it personally if it's week to week. It's when you start putting timelines on it and fans start putting deadlines on it, that's when it becomes an issue.
Yeah, again, I don't even know why it's an issue.
Well, as far as topics of conversation, because we're having this conversation of, well, is it too early? All of this could have been mitigated of, yeah, he's ready to go.
No, the is it too early conversation isn't even, to me, a real topic. As long as the player himself confirms, I'm 100% as far as the injury goes. If the player's like, well, you know what? I could probably use a couple more days. Now we have a conversation. Are you doing the best thing by your player? But if the player says, no, I'm healthy, I'm not in game condition because with a rib injury, I can't skate that much. I can't get my wind going as much because it's difficult breathing. Okay, well, we can live with you working your way back into condition, because if they get 13 minutes from Brock Besser tonight or 14 minutes from Brock Besser tonight, that's better than what they could have had in the lineup.
Yeah, the on-ice component, this is obviously a massive boost, right? And when you just look at the lines now, assuming they play the way they skated, like, that's a legit top six. We're no longer talking about, oh, this guy can do this in a top six role. It's six top six players through and through, and massive bonus.
Brock Besser will not be on the number one power play unit tonight based on the way the power play units operated. Mm-hmm. Travis Green and co, Newell Brown and co, they went with top unit that's been functioning right now with Toffoli on it. Obviously, they're going to put Besser on power play 2. Jake Virtanen moved over to the bumper spot as well. Besser on his downhill side. That's what they decided to go with. You kind of had a look there. I get the idea of Virtanen in the bumper spot from a shot perspective.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think of how that maneuvers around him, right?
Mm-hmm. But the quick shot that they've been trying to set up for Horvat, I can definitely see them trying to use Jake Virtanen in a similar role in the second power play unit.
But also just think how much more direct that second power play unit is. If you're trying to create a lane for Jake to get towards the net, like start from the middle, right? And if they're just launching pucks towards the net, it's easier path for him to get to the dirty area than from the outside.
True. And although I would say also that that unit, it doesn't always get set up. Like it almost it gets its power play chances off the rush as much as it gets its power play chances from the traditional, you know, half court offense, if we want to call it that.
No, absolutely. And an interesting configuration, but it shows, look, there is there's creative options now when you've got a surplus of talent. When one other guy comes in and it's no longer we're talking about Antoine Roussel's on the power play or whatever it is, it just presents different options.
Speaking of Antoine Roussel, three games. That's what Travis Green says. That's where there's been a change. You and I certainly labeled two of them.
Yeah.
And I guess for Travis Green, that goes back a game further. That goes back to the final game of the road trip. To the Arizona game.
Yes.
So that goes back to the Arizona game where Travis Green has seen a different Antoine Roussel than perhaps the guy we've seen for the bulk of this. And whether it's two games or three games, that's not the point. Coach is seeing the exact same thing. That's a player who's getting in faster on the forecheck, a guy who and that's the most important part of this. I don't think Antoine Roussel's attitude changed. I just don't think he could get to the spot where he could use the attitude.
The smile was always there. It's hard to say that he turned a corner with the injury, right? Because it's such a drastic injury. Do we see the recovery process in a week where we tell, oh, okay, well, there you go. He's back to normal. So if he's just giving more, whatever it is, he's becoming closer to the player that you saw last year and really the player that they're paying to have.
Yeah, and I'm not sure how people in their normal existence like we have try to relate to something like this. Here's how I would put it out there. I don't know how many of our listeners run.
Mm-hmm.
Not that you have to be a great runner, but when you start any type of running program, I'm going to do a 5K or I'm going to do the Sun Run this year. I always say to people, the first 2 weeks are going to be tough. Like the first day is going to be great because you're so excited you're starting a program. And then day two is going to be hard. But the first 2 weeks, that's where it's going to feel like, man, is this ever going to get easier? And then if you've done your program for a couple weeks, all of a sudden you know what? This is actually easier. Maybe I'm not as fast as I want to be, but the actual process is easier. And with Antoine Roussel's injury, I would say the same type of thing.
Yeah.
Like all of a sudden there comes this point where, you know what? I can get there a little quicker than I did before. And you don't know exactly when that's going to happen, but apparently it's been about a week.
And a large part of that is mental. Like how much does he trust the knee? Because one of the things you look at is how much is he planting on it to push off? And is he taking longer routes to get to spots that he wants to, because he doesn't want to cut as hard as he would want to. And so is he taking cleaner routes to create better forechecking angles? And if he's got a little bit more trust in his knee to play a little faster, just take better angles because he can put more strain, more tension on it, that shows up. And we kept saying, he looks a little half step away. Well, over the course of four strides, like a half step, if you're cleaning them up, that's how you make up that difference. And if he's got more trust in the knee, that's a huge development. And look, it's good that Travis Green praised him, and it's good because it's warranted over these past three games. And there was a lot out of that press conference.
Oh, yeah, there was a lot there. I got all these notes all over the place here. I'll throw another lineup note in there. Tyler Mott didn't skate with the group this morning. Travis Green was asked, is there anything to that? And he said no, which means there is a scenario that exists that Tyler Mott plays tonight, and if he does, I would suspect Louis Erickson's the guy who comes out based on the lineup because that's where Mott would slot in on that fourth line beside Sutter and Virtanen. But could it be McEwen? Yep, it could. I can't see it being anyone else. It'll be one of those two guys. No way Jake comes out.
He'd be the only other guy.
No chance.
No chance.
I am saying zero chance.
I'm
zero chance of the way Jake Virtanen has played lately
not,
that he comes out of the lineup.
I'm done predicting where Travis Green is going to go. That's what I'll say.
Fair
right?
enough.
But I'm not taking him off the candidate list.
I just
of
took
guys.
Him off. He's off of my candidate list.
It's between McEwen, Louis Erickson, and Virtanen. I think you can make a case for any of them. Obviously, the experience goes against McEwen. The offense goes against Louis, and the defense goes against Jake. It's what do you trust right now, right?
I think we're past the point of Vertanen being a healthy scratch conversation. It's more of where is he going to be in the lineup conversation. I really do.
No, but this goes back to just roles. Like, if does he trust with a full healthy lineup, is there enough defensive trust in him in a fourth line role?
I think there is now. Now, I don't think that's where most of the trust is placed. I think most of the trust is placed in the ability to create offense and the confidence he has. But my interpretation of what I've seen from the coaching staff is that there's enough belief in that part that the fear of it is far outweighed by the positives. That's where I think we're at with Jake Virtanen. Not for forever and ever and ever.
Yeah.
But with the way Jake Virtanen has played, I don't think he's a candidate anymore. I really don't.
All right. Remains to be seen.
It certainly does. So that's a lineup note. The other was that Markstrom skated today.
Now, yeah.
We didn't all get to see Markstrom skate today, but Travis Green was asked about it. Jacob Markstrom was out there. We didn't find out how he felt or anything like that, but tomorrow marks the two-week evaluation day. This, to me, is okay. Feel good enough to get out there and skate. Let's see how this responds overnight. Is there any swelling? Where are we at right now with Jacob Markstrom? I don't know how soon he could be back. But tomorrow marks 2 weeks. We'll wait and see.
Yeah, this to me was, exactly what you're talking about. Let's test it. How does the knee, the knee respond? And from that, we'll see how your recovery process is. And you can probably give a better timeline tomorrow. And this is really about just testing what he can't do. What's the pain management? It's one of the things Aldi talked about, not that he knew the injury specifically, but just in relation to an injury he had in the past, is it's really about pain management. And if he feels that it responded well, it's an encouraging sign that he was on the ice, even at all.
Which is great stuff from Alex. Yeah. It was a great clip that we were playing when he talked about the potential diagnosis a couple of weeks ago. I think there's a lot of people that can relate to having a meniscus injury, but very few can relate to having to play at a professional level after having it.
And we should say, like, there's different versions what could happen, right? There's, do you clean it up? Is it, I've heard it described as like the flap of a bucket lid. It comes over the knee, right? It's a number of ways it could go. And if it got cleaned up and he's able to deal with the pain, then it's an encouraging sign that they were able to get him on the ice, even at this stage.
Duncan texts in, maybe if the staff gives us the gloom and doom, then with Markstrom being back, then there's a shot that he comes back earlier. I think that's what Duncan is alluding to with the Brock Besser timeline and how that might relate to Jacob Markstrom. We'll wait and see. Obviously, that would be a big boost. Some big injuries around the National Hockey League right now, and players coming back. This is a big return day. Obviously, Besser's back here in Toronto. They are having a coronation ceremony for Morgan Rielly with what he means to the back end. I say that tongue-in-cheek, but, man, you look at how much he drives for them from the back end and how good he is, and especially with Jake Muzzin out of the lineup in Toronto right now, getting
especially
Morgan Rielly
Florida
back,
breathing down their necks.
Well, isn't it funny how fast it happened? Toronto wasn't playing great, but Florida was so in the tank that it didn't matter. All of a sudden, the Leafs go to California. I'm not going to say that nobody in Toronto watched those games, but there's a lot of Leaf fans that said, man, I got to work the next day. This is a 10:30 Eastern start in a couple of those games. Sorry, I'm out. I'm out. And so it was out of sight, out of mind, I think, for some Leafs fans. The Leafs picked up 1 point in California, which used to be the way of the world when those three teams were good, but not now that they reside at the bottom of the standings. And while they were picking up just 1 point, Florida picked up points in three straight, even though they only won one of those games. As you just mentioned, they're 1 point back at the Leafs, and I think people woke up and went, oh, my God. Leafs are only 1 point up on the Florida Panthers. It's go time, man. And they've got the Lightning in town tonight. No Victor Hedman for Tampa Bay.
And we've mentioned this before. So much has been made about the Pacific Division being, you know, the worst division in hockey. That's fair. And certain teams are lucky to be in that division. The Leafs are lucky in a way to be in the Atlantic Division.
I made this point last year too.
Yeah, it's run away with those two.
Yeah.
And you are scratching and clawing to get the third guy to be in that, to be the first team that gets shuttled out by Boston and Tampa Bay. And it's other situations, like the Metro Division is 5 points up on the Leaf.
I had Luke Fox on today. One of our conversation points was, what's a bigger story in Toronto? The fact that this is a possible playoff preview tonight with Tampa Bay in town, or oh, my God, they might not get in.
Right.
It's funny, isn't it? Because we've assumed for quite some time, Toronto seemed to get itself back together. Okay, they're in the playoffs now. It's just a matter of where they're going to be. And if Tampa Bay overtakes Boston to set up that matchup that every single Leafs fan would dread once again with the Bruins and Leafs in round one. I think Leafs fans like the idea of playing the Lightning in round one just based on style. But now all of a sudden have to deal with the reality they have to get in to make that happen.
And I think part of it is it's Florida. Right? I don't know if there's an acceptance of, hey, someone's chasing us down because it's Florida. Not that they're not a good team or anything like that, but it's Florida. I think you would recognize more if it was Montreal, if it was the Rangers.
Of course.
Or whatever team it is. You would just, oh my God, the Montreal Canadiens are chasing us. Of all, like, historic franchise, not saying the Leafs are number one, but they're in that upper echelon of conversation. On the other end of the spectrum, Florida might be at the bottom.
It's
with
fair.
A bullet.
Yeah,
and so I just don't know if there's a recognition from that fan base or across the nation that...
Look at the way Carolina was laughed off
yeah,
a lot of last season because
exactly.
It's Carolina and they're doing the storm surge.
They're just a bunch of jerks.
It's Carolina, though. And next thing you know, Carolina's in the Eastern Conference Final and people have to tip their hats and say, actually, that's a really good team. They're not just a bunch of gimmicks in a market that doesn't care about hockey. That's a really good team.
If I was a Leafs fan, I would wake up to the possibility that Florida is on its way to passing you.
I kind of feel like that's a Bare Naked Lady song. If I was a Maple Leafs fan. Are we going to do that now? Oh, that's the morning show thing. That's what they do with the songs. But I digress. Man, some big injuries. I just mentioned this. Morgan Riley's coming back, which is great news for the league. And a guy from these parts, good to see him back healthy. Besser's back tonight. McKinnon Lee's last night's game with a lower body injury for Colorado. They've got him out, Rantanen out, Kadri out right now. We'll see if there's an update on Nathan McKinnon. But let's hope that is short-term just from a hockey perspective. But, man, what a slew of injuries they're dealing with right now. I mentioned Hedman's not going to play for the Lightning tonight. He took the morning skate, but he's not going to play for the Lightning in this game. Stamkos remains out there. Markstrom remains out here. Guys like Seth Jones out in Columbus. There are some big-time names on the shelf right now.
And that's why you can't keep using injuries as an excuse, right? They're prevalent all across the league. Everybody deals with them at some point. And you can use it in one season. You can use it in maybe two. I get it's a reality. But you can't keep going back to it. And, you know, this is the first season that there's real stakes for this franchise here. And, you know, Jim Benning's kind of used that injuries excuse too many times. So if they miss this year, I'm sorry. I don't want to hear that. I understand it happened. But guess what? A lot of other teams had to deal with injuries. Look at the Winnipeg Jets. Decimated blue line. Completely decimated. They're 2 points ahead of you right now. Yes, more games played, but injuries happen. The Oilers dealt with without Connor McDavid. They weren't even sure if he was going to come into the season healthy. And they're doing fine. It's you have to have the infrastructure in place to overcome those injuries.
Well, and you see what the Oilers did last night. They were no good. And they haven't been very good for four games, and they got called out by their coach last night. But here's the difference with teams that cement playoff spots. They picked up 5 points in those four games.
Yeah.
They haven't been good in any of them.
Manageable losses.
They picked up 5 points. Their goaltending has been off the charts. Mikko Koskinen has been unreal. Another, 45 saves last night in that overtime loss to the Vegas Golden Knights. Are the Coyotes doomed officially after last night? One of the things we'll kick around on the other side. Keep those texts coming in. I want to hit this again. It is Canucks for Kids Fund Telethon Day, 1-855-KIDS-FUND, or canucks.com/telethon. Any amount helps. Some incredible beneficiaries, including BC's Children's Hospital, Canucks Autism Network, and Canuck Place Children's Hospice. We'll be pumping up those numbers and that place to donate online throughout the course of the day. Israel Fair of The Athletic joins us next, frequent Sportsnet 650 contributor as well. Right here in your home of Canucks hockey, Sportsnet 650.
Now more of Canucks Central on the official home of the Vancouver Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Brock Besser's back. If you're just joining us, that is the news of the day practiced on the weekend. A lot of speculation as to when he might come back, if he would even be on the road trip. Well, he is back as of tonight with the Vancouver Canucks, skating along on a line with Bo Horvat and Tanner Pearson. It's 31 days after the injury against the Calgary Flames that Besser makes his way back for the Vancouver Canucks. Scott Rento, Bick Nazar with you on Canucks Central, joined now by The Athletic's Israel Ferris, frequent contributor on Sportsnet 650 as well. Did this news catch you off guard today?
No, I think that we felt after the weekend that Brock would probably come into the lineup before they went out on the road. And look, this is a team that needs some offensive punch. We know that the goal scoring hasn't necessarily been as consistent as I think people from the outside might have wanted for Besser this season, but he's still a highly skilled offensive player. He's going to give the team another dynamic in the top six. And this is a team, especially the team that they're playing tonight, not exactly known for playing exciting hockey, that they can use as much offense as possible. Because the last couple of games, the last losses, I guess, you look at Arizona, you look at Columbus, those were not exactly entertaining games. They were boring, grinded out, muck it out games. And the Canucks, the best version of the Canucks that we've seen this year is a high-flying team that's scoring a ton of goals, and they haven't played all that well in those grinded-out games.
Canucks weren't able to open the scoring in either of those games against Arizona or against Columbus as well, so that somewhat dictates the style you're going to see for at least the bulk of the rest of the way in those two cases. Just to give you an idea about the Islanders, as bad as they have been lately, and they've lost six consecutive games, they picked up more points in their last six than the Canucks have.
Yes, and like, so much of this is like a team like Boston, we talked a lot about in January and in December, is when they were losing. Well, they were still losing in OT, right? There were close games, and you can manage your losses that way if you continually tick forwards and you're always getting a point. What the Canucks haven't done is get to OT and play those tight games.
Which they were earlier in the year.
Yeah, which they absolutely were. And when you're having these fluxes of going from six goals to two goals and one goal, you're not pushing to get to that next level of, okay, we may have lost, but we've gotten halfway there. That's a real issue that's crept up, because they have the regulation wins along with the other guys in this range.
Yep.
It's just, are you managing your losses? And they haven't been able to do that.
Yeah, they've been a team that when they've been hot, they've been really hot. And some of that's been on the power play. They've had a couple games where the power play has been hugely productive, and they're scoring five goals and they're blowing teams out. And then they, I mean, you look at the Boston game from a couple of weeks ago now, and that feels like it was months ago. But that was a team coming off of a back-to-back at the end of a West Coast road trip for an Eastern Conference team. But the Canucks were rolling that night. And when they're playing downhill and they're scoring goals, they're really tough to stop, whether it's a 5-on-5 or on the power play. But the games where it's been tough, they've created a little bit, but I mean, you look at the Columbus game, and without Elias Pettersson's moment of glory coming out of the penalty box, that's a game where they don't score at all. And this is a team that, when they're playing well, they are producing offensively. So adding Besser back to that mix will be interesting, because we have seen, as much as the Louis Erickson on the second line has been a thing to start games, Jake Virtanen's gotten opportunities in that spot, and they have tried to at least push a little bit. And well, you look at the Colorado game, that was a third line that really pushed things for this team. We saw that when Antoine Roussel first came back, where that third line, when it was Gaudette and Virtanen playing together, they were scoring some goals. That's the secondary scoring that you need, but this team can't rely on.
Well, what obviously stands out, that okay, when you just look at on paper, those six players in those top six spots,
yeah,
nobody doesn't belong. We're not trying to make cases for anyone anymore. It's not, well, Louis Erickson's playing there because he can do this. And then because of that, you start looking at the bottom six, and everyone just kind of, it looks and feels right. More so than anything.
Yeah, it certainly does. And we'll see what the bottom six looks like. If Tyler Mott can go, my guess is Louis Erickson comes out, but we'll wait and see. Jake Virtanen's on that fourth line. I said I don't think he's a candidate for the healthy scratch right now, but maybe the fact that we see him on the fourth line instead of the third line puts him a little closer to that than I would have suspected. But
just to be clear, I see a bunch of people texting in because of what we talked about. Like, I think it'll be Louis Erickson, but
You don't think he's impervious to the conversation?
Yeah, right? Like, the whole conversation has to go to Zach MacEwen, and it has to extend to Jake Virtanen, too. Now, when we just look at it of, I understand the fans' frustration over, okay, here's a $6 million player, and so many people are ready to run him out of town, but you can't ignore that he isn't doing something right now. And when we're talking about what each guy brings in that fourth line role, there's a defensive element that you have to contribute. And I'm just not convinced it's always going to be Eriksson over Vertanen or McEwen.
It may not be, but I'll say this, just from a symbolic point of view, if you want to have it. They played a Louis Eriksson style game on the weekend.
Sure.
And they need to play a little more of, we're going to push this. And a lot of that has to do with scoring the first goal. But Brandon Sutter came on here just over an hour ago, and he said, yeah, we were responsible defensively, and at the same time, we can't be safe. We've got to find a better balance than we had.
Yeah, this team at its best, and that's why I think that when you looked at, okay, who's going to play with Quinn Hughes? And he certainly hasn't been the same since being banged up a little bit. Just that's obvious to the eye. He has not been the same dynamic player. But you're looking at, okay, who should Quinn Hughes play with? Well, look, there was a time where him and Tyler Myers were playing together, and was it a perfect pairing? No. But was it accentuating the Canucks' strengths? Yes. And now that's what you're going to get with Horvat playing with Besser, where I think the last couple of years, or last year, I guess, their numbers together were just okay, but in Besser's rookie year, they were the duo for this team, and they were far and away the most productive forwards. So now you add that to Tanner Pearson, who's also brings that element and a bit of a bigger body as well on that line to go with the first line that has been put into place since Tyler Toffoli has been here. And look, they haven't won a ton since Toffoli's been here, but he's fit in really well. He's a guy that seems to find the seams in defenses to get to where he needs to get to, both playing with Pettersson, playing with Miller. He has been a fit there. I think you nailed it, Scotty. It's this team has to push for it. They have to go for it. Playing safe down the stretch is not going to be enough for this group, and they've already thrown away all the points that they earned when they had that really hot stretch at the start of 2020.
Well, and Travis Green's admission of, hey, man, we don't have the luxury to wait for Brock to get up to condition, that tells you everything you need to know about the situation they find themselves in. I don't think they believe they're desperate yet, but they can't wait anymore. The margin is all gone. The standings tell you as much. One of the teams that's in and around them, are they done now after what happened last night? Was that the death knell for the Arizona Coyotes losing in regulation in Winnipeg?
Yeah, I think so. It's been trending so poorly for them for so long. Weirdly enough, since they acquired Taylor Hall, right? Yeah. And you hate to associate the two things, but the timelines match up.
So does the Darcy Kuemper injury.
Yes.
Which happened 2 years later. But
it...
Throw that in there.
It doesn't look good. Like, it's... We said this a couple of weeks ago. Teams... The best case, or one of the best cases for the Canucks, is teams are going to fall off. And at some point, we can't say, well, if Arizona goes 12-0, they can get to 98 points, and it looks great. Well, it's...
I mean, nine.
That's not a team.
9-3 to get to 92 seems like a reach.
Yeah.
And 92 might get you in. Maybe.
Yeah, and that's tough. Like, I'm not convinced Arizona's going to be able to do that.
No, nor am I. I think most people aren't. And you and I think, because we're stubborn, held on to hope for some time because we... When Taylor Hall got traded there, I think you and I were on the, yeah, that's going to be a playoff team.
But yeah.
I was the same way. I liked them a lot. I thought their play in the first 2 months of the season was really strong. They were in that mold of the Islanders last year, or Dallas the last couple of years. Defensively strong. They were able to get production from a handful of forwards up front. They did that the first 2 months with Phil Kessel not being hugely productive. You look at, oh, Taylor Hall's a guy who, all the analytics, all the metrics, he pushes play offensively, but they've had a few too many holes, and I think that they're out of it too. And Edmonton's been the team that's been hot in the division. Calgary's had a ton of ups and downs this year, but they seem to have at least a better foundation than the Coyotes.
I do think it speaks to as well as how long can you weather the storm, and usually in a shorter sample size, a couple weeks, 3 weeks, maybe a month in some cases, important part of your team leaves, you can kind of get through it, especially depending what type of the season. Imagine if the Canucks had lost Jacob Markstrom at that time, the way that they lost Kuemper. Because if you look at Arizona's results right after they lost Kuemper, they were okay.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, they tanked and they couldn't get it back. And they didn't have that stabilizing influence. And look at Toronto. Toronto gets Morgan Rielly back tonight. They're 2 games over .500 since losing him. The 23 games he missed, they're only 2 games over .500 in the NHL. And they were 8 games over with him in the lineup. Man, the length of the injury and when it occurs during the season is so important in the NHL.
Well, I mean, that applies here to Vancouver, though, too. Like, with the timing of when Jacob Markstrom would get down and the length of it, obviously...
Bruins game's the last game he played.
Yeah. It's they've been able to play well, but the results haven't been there, right? And that's the encouraging thing in one regard that you could say, well, the team has improved. It's no longer a goalie getting shelled and them coming out with the victory. By and large, like, it's stunning to say that they've gotten points out of five of the last six, because you would say they've earned more than 2 points. But, you know, the box score and the standings say, well, it's 2 points in the last six games. And realistically, if they translate how they've played for when Jacob Markstrom comes back, I think there's enough of a runway here that they should be able to make it. Now, you've got a stake to playing that way.
It's going to be interesting to see if we get an update tomorrow. Is he skates today? They leave tomorrow, obviously. Does Jim Benning hold any type of availability? Can anybody get a hold of him and find out? Because tomorrow is the two-week reevaluation of Jacob Markstrom.
Right, yeah, and it's huge. And, yeah, encouraging that he skated. That's really all we know at this point. But it's going to be really interesting to look back at how this team, I think Bick is just saying it right there, since they've lost him, they have played better defensively. You look at their play in the defensive zone, and they've been tighter. They've had, yes, especially in the last game, a couple of high-profile gaffes. But to me, that's exactly linked to what we led off with. This is a team that thrives when they are pushing offensively. And yes, sometimes they're giving some back, and their goaltender, they're not a perfect hockey team. They're a bubble team. They're a team that's fighting for a playoff spot. I still think that they get in, whether Markstrom comes back within the next week, couple of weeks, because right, you still got a month of hockey basically left to play. And so if he gets back and he's still able to play a couple of weeks, the last couple of weeks, you feel pretty good about that. And I think that a lot of the panic about Thatcher Demko has really slowed down after a couple of games and a couple of crazy bounces in goals that really tilted games.
The style of play thing is reminiscent to what, like, Arizona we were just talking about. Like, when Taylor Hall came in, they did play differently. It wasn't as compact. It wasn't as sound, because that's part of what having Taylor Hall is. We use the term, it's not that they're going to score more, it's that they're finding easier ways to score because they have Taylor Hall. If Vancouver gets Jacob Markstrom back, will they revert back to how they played, because they understand that they've got this brick wall behind them and they can feel they can take more chances? Or do you go for this complete team and say, maybe we don't take as many chances and that's just who we are?
So everything you guys have been describing has been skewed one way or another to, and this has really been what this season has been about.
Yeah.
And this has been a season of progress, but it's been a search for balance. And the offense was all great because Markstrom could carry some of the eraser at the back end. And yet the Canucks coaches told us the whole way, we're giving up too many high danger chances. Fans saw it as well. But they could kind of live on that side of the edge. Now that Markstrom's been out, they said, okay, we're going to have to change things a little. And they haven't been able to find the balance the other way. They've skewed too far, and that's what this search is down the stretch, isn't it?
Well,
not that they're going to be a perfect hockey team, but can they get it a little more in line on both sides?
The problem with that is they haven't discovered who they are yet. And I say it all the year long. Like, the first 50, 60 games is about discovering your identity. And I don't think we know what this team is for this season. Moving forward, like, Elias Pettersson will graduate into a bigger role. JT Miller clearly has. Quinn Hughes will do it. And will forge that for this era of Canucks hockey. But for the myopic view of this season, like, I'm not sure we know what this team is. At least when moments of crisis happen, what are you relying upon? We just saw a bunch of moments of crisis these past four games. And there wasn't a lot to draw upon for this team.
Well, I think we know the answer. It's just for one reason or another, it hasn't materialized. It's the power play. Isn't that what their reliance is and has been for a lot of the season? But they haven't drawn as many penalties, and when they have, they haven't been as productive. That's kind of their fallback, isn't it?
For sure. And the fact, this is something that really illustrated how well they played in that stretch where it was a 14-3, right? They were just really good, and they were doing something that very few teams in the NHL do now. They were running a second power play unit. Not quite as much as the first unit, but they were giving them a lot of rope. They were starting a lot of power plays as well, and they were getting rewarded for it. Adam Gaudette, Tanner Pearson, Jake Virtanen, they were having a productive second unit. Look at Edmonton this year. They've had a great power play. It's all the first unit. It's all Connor McDavid. It's all Leon Draisaitl. The Canucks, yes, they've had some hot streaks with that first unit, but we've seen that they've had to change some things up, whether it was flipping Besser and Pettersson onto their strong and weak sides. We've certainly seen the fact that, I think of late, on the first unit, Bo Horvat's really been the one that's making things go. And that's I think that's indicative as well of, okay, he's had to really play a defensive role at 5-on-5. He's taking advantage of opportunities. He's the one that's really pushing things with that power play, you know, but the second unit's gone quiet, and that was a huge luxury. That's not something that teams are planning for in the NHL. It's all almost like, okay, this guy can help us. That's why Adam Gaudette has earned a spot on this team full-time. And we've seen it a couple games at 5-on-5 as well where, okay, the stuff that he does well will lead to goals, will lead to wins. They haven't had that this year, and that's when you really look at, okay, the first unit, it needs to be better for this team to get those early goals. As you mentioned, Scotty, this is a team that's not coming out and grabbing the game by its throat and scoring the first goal. They've had to play a little bit of defensive style. We understand that because as we got toward the end of or just before Markstrom's injury, yeah, that Chicago game, they were not good at all. And Markstrom had to make 5 or 6 monster saves, and that was becoming too commonplace. But it needs to shift back, and you shouldn't be too worried about giving stuff back on the power play.
So it's 3-15 on the power play in the last 6 games. Is there a change we need to see on the first unit?
You know what? I really liked that first unit power play last game. They just didn't click.
Yeah, not personnel. I think the 5 guys you got are the 5 guys you're going to play with. Do you move Pettersson to the other side? And maybe you create that lane for Bo Horvat
I'm not there yet. I mean, Horvat had that great chance last game. It just ends up being a really nice save by Merzlikins on that shot. And they've worked harder. One of the nice adjustments I've liked since they put Horvat in that spot is that they've worked that down low play better with Miller on the other side. And they found a way to get him that. And Toffoli's been obviously a nice addition to that power play unit as well. You wonder how much Quinn Hughes' injury
I think that's the first thing that comes to mind.
So the reason I say this is it feels like it's so much work to get Pettersson the puck to do the one-timer. When he's on the other side, he handles the puck so much more. And if there's too much of a reliance on Quinn Hughes to maneuver the puck around, do you just allow Elias Pettersson to have the puck more?
Are we having this conversation if that stick doesn't explode? I don't know. No, I'm not kidding.
But also, how many other opportunities did he have to get a shot off? It was the one that he hit the side of the net, and if he's handling the puck more right now, like that's not a bad option. And it creates that easy spot for Bo Horvat. It creates maybe JT Miller's on the other side, so you still get that left-handed shot.
Well, here's the other interesting part of this, and it's a great addition to have Besser come back and jump onto that second unit tonight. It gives you another option if the power play can't get going here, and feels like it better get going because this feels like a really important week.
Yeah.
Islanders tonight, then it's Arizona and Colorado back-to-back, and not that there's a good time to catch Colorado, but maybe with the injury situation this week, it's as good as any. And then that Winnipeg game on Sunday looms really large
big
here
time.
At Rogers Arena. This is a really big week for this hockey club.
Well, look who's playing who right now. Winnipeg's next 3 games, Edmonton, Calgary, Vancouver, all on the road. Minnesota plays Vegas, Philly, Nashville. And Vancouver plays the Islanders, Arizona, Colorado. Right? Like, in these next 3 games, you would say the schedule advantage leans towards Vancouver.
Well, isn't it this time next week, Calgary and Vancouver will be equal in games as well, and now we'll have a better way to say, they played a guy. No, 72 games. Calgary's sitting around watching a lot this week. They're going to get the Islanders next. They don't play till Thursday. Another game this weekend, and then they're gonna find out exactly where they fit. And they have their one last road trip starts next week, which is strange that their last road trip would be the one through New York, but that's what Calgary's is. They've only got 4 road games left, and 3 of them are New York, you know, the Islanders in New Jersey, but that's just the way she sets up right now. We're going to have a better read. We're going to have a better barometer on where everybody is here.
Yeah, and look, if we're just going to be play this really simple, they're playing an Islanders team that's fighting for their playoff lives, and they're playing a Coyotes team that we may think is out of it, but they're not going to roll over. These are games that this team has to win, and they had a number of those, but they didn't feel quite like this. You thought the Coyotes game last week, start the homestand, would be one. Okay, they're back home, and that was a really tough game in terms of the way that the style of play ended up being. Well, the next 2 games are not going to be any different, and so I think it really is contingent on this team to come out and play and fight fire with fire and not have to feel like they have to play the Islanders game or the Coyotes game, because I think on paper, especially now with Besser back, as Vic was saying, you look at that top six, sure, you might want to flip a couple guys around depending on what's going on, but you have no, there's no reason to be concerned about the players in that top six right now. And it's on them to start that goal scoring, because we have seen this team, when they get a couple of early goals, they're able, I mean, that's why the Columbus game on the weekend, a couple weekends ago, was really tough, because they played a really good game. They scored those early goals and then they collapsed defensively late in the game. That was tough, because that was pretty close to a playbook kind of, especially in a road game, what you want to see from this team. But if they're able to do it here at home before they head back out on the road, when they score, they tend to score in bunches, and that's what this team is, and that's, I think, what's going to get them into the playoffs.
Should be a lot of eyeballs on this one tonight. Brock Besser returns. Maybe the hockey gods have a little payback for him. Remember when his first injury was against which team mid-March? Mm-hmm. That was the New York Islanders. So maybe Brock Besser gets on the right side of things. Maybe he contributes to the scoring tonight. I do want to mention one more time, really big night for the Canucks for Kids Fund as well. It is the annual telethon. It'll be going on the television. We will be promoting it all day on the radio. 1-855-KIDS-FUND. That's 1-855-437-3863. If you have the ability to donate, we certainly encourage you to do so. You can also go online, canucks.com/telethon. The three incredible beneficiaries, and there are many more, but the three at the top of the list, Canuck Autism Network, Canuck Place Children's Hospice, and BC Children's Hospital Foundation. But there are a number of other organizations this contributes to.
It keeps going on and on and on. If you want to get involved, you can donate now. You just got to call 1-855-KIDS-FUND, 1-855-437-3863, and you can donate online, canuckplace.org/telethon.
Obviously something you guys will be pumping up on the pregame show as well. On the program, what else is coming our way?
It's Tuesday, so Elliot Friedman going to be joining us at 4 o'clock, Arfan Gafar at 5 o'clock as we get set for a massive game tonight.
Excellent stuff. Izzy, thanks for joining us, buddy.
Always good to be here, guys.
You going to be at the rink tonight?
No, I'll be taking it in from home, and
he's staying away from thousands of people.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, we didn't even get into that. Perhaps a conversation for tomorrow. Reach Deep is coming your way next as we count you down to the return of Brock Besser tonight against the New York Islanders in your home of Canucks hockey, Sportsnet 650.